everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show. On October the 6th already, Tom, midweek edition, we have a balloon mystery going on right now. Jeff Lattice, who is our aviation contributor to the Buckmaster show, he's a JetBlue captain. And he was at his home with some very high-powered binoculars, Tom, and he was looking at a balloon that had been launched from the airport. I believe it was he was looking at it at about 55,000 feet over the Rincons when there was a problem. The balloon malfunctioned. Several of our local news agencies, including Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, are trying to follow up at this hour about what might have happened. But Jeff did post on his Facebook picture. He's got a picture of the balloon. Looks like it's like a blob, but it looks like apparently it's going down. And that happened this morning. So that's kind of a developing story. If we get some more information about that, we will pass it on to you.
Did he give you any idea of the size? Is this a big one? Or
I would assume it would have to be big for him to see that with the high-powered binoculars.
So it's not a weather balloon or anything like that?
No. He said right after he took the pictures, which, again, are on his Facebook page, Jeff Lattice, L-A-T-A-S. He witnessed the balloon malfunction, saw something deploy or fall from the lower spherical object. Then the balloon seemed to pop, and he watched both fall behind the mountain range between him and the obvious impact point.
Well, it'll be interesting to find out what this is all about.
We'll see what's going on there. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Democrat Ward 6 Councilman Steve Kasachek. Steve, how are you?
Doing well, but that's not a real good marketing story for Worldview when they're trying to get people to sign up to float in their balloon up to, what, 80,000 feet or whatever.
Yeah, now, of course, we don't know if this is Worldview. I don't know. It could be something else. Maybe I don't even know about a weather balloon or what it is, but hopefully...
55,000 feet's up there.
Yeah, 55,000 feet is up there, and hopefully... we'll find out more about that. Steve, I want to begin with the tragic situation that unfolded at the Amtrak station with the death of a DEA agent. I believe another agent's in critical condition. The Tucson police officer who came to the aid really ran to the run, heard the gunshots, apparently will survive. Do the passengers on these Amtrak trains, Steve Kasachek, is it your understanding that they go through metal detectors and like you would at the airports?
No. And I've felt this for a long time. My mom used to travel trains all the time. You walk into the depot, check in, get your ticket, sit down and wait for the train to show up and get on. There is, unless things have changed, and I have not ridden a train in a few years, then there is virtually no effective security for that kind of thing when you get on a train. I am surprised we haven't seen this kind of thing more often, frankly, unless they have really upped their game. But the last time I traveled by train, there was just like nothing. You go to an airport, you're taking your shoes off, you go through metal detectors, you get wanded, it's crazy. It's almost intrusive, but just the polar opposite when you get on a train.
Steve, is this something that every time Amtrak though pulls into our station, was this a random check, or were you able to determine whether this is done on a daily basis or what?
It is. They called it routine. But they don't check every train. Every time Sunset Limited comes through with passengers, DEA is not getting on with dogs and checking people. So there was my understanding is they had some prior knowledge that they were looking for something. But the routineness of it is does not mean it happens every single time. I want to agree with you, though, what you're suggesting, and in TPD, in their support, the federal agents did an excellent job. The fact that some guy on the train just began randomly shooting and that no passengers were hurt is amazing, to say the least. It's great. Obviously, everybody's saddened. Our flags are still at half staff in respect of the DEA agent who was killed. The other one is in serious condition, and the TPD officer is in stable but improving condition. So it's, you know, the TPD is supporting the FBI in the investigation however they can. Because there was a federal agent involved, the FBI is the lead agency on the investigation. It was pretty interesting, though, the video footage that I'm sure you saw. There's a website that I've actually had in my newsletter that the Tucson Historic Train Depot people put up, and there are 50 different, I don't make it that number approximately, but there are about 50 different train stations throughout the country that just have live streaming video. So if you want to see, for instance, Des Moines, Iowa train station live, and just see what's going on, they can click on this. So they had this live stream going on their rail cam, just by chance, just because Tucson is one of the 50, and that's where those videos came from. And they're pretty amazing, seeing the real time activities of these officers.
I was thinking, as Chief Magnus, when he gave his news conference, which was televised. I think CNN and some of the cable carried it live. I was thinking he's finally going to get his hearing coming up on his position. He's been nominated to head up the Border Patrol and Customs. I'm just wondering, do you have any thoughts about, would you like to see, if he does go on to get that position, would you like to see the position filled internally for the police chief, Steve Kasachek?
Well, first of all, I will be sorry to see Chris go. I was a big supporter of his when we got him from Northern California. I think he's done an excellent job changing some of the way policing is done in this community. We have gone to a community policing model. He's a very forward-thinking police chief, and he's going to be a big loss. At both a personal level, and because I just like the guy as a friend, and also just from a professional standpoint. He'll probably get selected. I mean, it's not like he's, that I'm aware of, he's got a bunch of skeletons in his closet. And it's just sad that it's taken this long from his perspective to get through the political process. It had nothing to do with him. The delay was because I think it was Ron Biden, one of the other senators, was saying until he got answers about what happened between the Trump administration and protests that were happening in Portland last year, then he was going to hold up the whole selection process. So anyway, that got cleared up. I think we have some quality people within the department itself who could step into that role. My sense, though, is that the council will say, look, let's do a national search. Let's beat the bushes. Let's see who's out there and what's out there. But I would hope that some of the folks that we've got internally who know the culture, who've been a part of Magnus's transformation of the department, and frankly are just good hands, and they know the community, I think I would hope that they step up and put their application in, and that this council would give them strong consideration. And there's a couple of them come to mind right now that I think that could step into that role instantly.
We're coming up on the Mona's break, but maybe we can just begin this discussion that we've plateaued, Councilman Kasachek, with these cases. I watch them every day. You do as well. They're in the 250 to 300 range every day in Pima County, the COVID cases. Are you disappointed that the U of A has decided, along with the other two state universities, to hold off on a vaccine mandate?
Yeah, they have nothing to hide behind now that the court has determined that that law was unconstitutional. They should have known it was unconstitutional. It was a foolish law that they passed. Budget reconciliation bill, they had everything, including the kitchen sink, thrown into it. And it took Judge Cooper like a nanosecond to determine that that thing was unconstitutional. I think Bobby Robbins owes it to this community to be a leader. He comes from a science background, and he has said he would prefer that everybody be vaccinated. Well, now that you have no legal entanglement to prevent that, you ought to take the lead and say, if you're going to be a participant in this community, by the university community, whether you're faculty, staff, or student, then you need to be vaccinated and show proof of that vaccination. I take the same position that I just said with respect to city employees, and we can get into more of that after the break if you'd like, but I think that for the university, they have invited 40,000 people into this community. They need to make sure that they're doing their part in making sure that this community is safe, and the very least they can do is say, if you're going to matriculate in the city of Tucson at the U of A, you need to be vaccinated.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And President Robbins says, let's all see how this plays out. But I think we're going to pick that up for sure after we talk about, you know what, Steve Kasachek. Yep. Are you in the mood for some bakery goods?
I am always in the mood for bakery goods. It's why I take my statin every morning so that I can get away with it.
Mona's Danish Bakery. We love Mona's. Home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Councilman Kasachek loves Mona's Danish Bakery. He's been known to order a Kringle or two. Actually did one for a very special occasion, didn't you, Councilman?
My mother-in-law's 100th birthday, got her a Kringle, and a couple weeks later took her up there and came out with an apple turnover.
There you go. All right, Mona's open right now for lunch, and they will certainly be happy to do breakfast for you. And as I often say, in fact, I say it almost every day with Mona's, the hardest decision you'll make when you walk into the bakery is, what am I going to pick from that bakery case? Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. Open now at the northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More with Steve Kasachek right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Steve Kasachek, Ward 6, Democrat, with us on the live line. And before the break, we were talking about, I think these cases, I keep hoping that, you know, they're going to drop below 200 COVID cases a day, but they're in that 200 to 300 range. And the moving average, Steve Kasachek, for the past 2 weeks for Arizona has been going up, while a lot of the country for the Delta variant has been going the other way, going down.
That's right. And so, first of all, I think it's so cool that you have the Tucson Wildlife Center as one of your sponsors.
They do
such a great job out there. Exactly. We've had 1.1 million cases in the state of Arizona. The Pima County, you know, we're doing better than the rest of the state and most of the rest of the state in terms of vaccinations, with, you know, something in the mid 50s as far as the vaccination rate is concerned. And if you drill down to some of the older age groups, that number has even increased. It's into the 70% and 80% percentiles. But you look at, for instance, Mojave County, they've got a vaccination rate of 43%. La Paz County is 46%. I mean, that's the reason that we're, and frankly, our big population center, Maricopa County, they're at 44% also. So you got, you know, the millions of people who are living in those three counties doing less than 50% vaccination, and it should come as no surprise that we're having trouble as a state climbing out of this. You know, the city, you know, Pima County, we've had over 2,600 fatalities in Pima County alone, and over 20,000 statewide. So one of the reasons for that is that we've had our hands tied by the governor and by the state legislature, principally by the governor, though, because of a series of executive orders. We recently instituted a vaccination mandate on city employees. As soon as we did that, though, we wound up in court, and the court has recently ruled in our favor. But, of course, the attorney general has appealed that, and it's now going to the state Supreme Court for a final determination. And who knows what's going to come out of the state Supreme Court. We yesterday at the council level, though, advised our employees that we are moving forward with the discipline. It's a five-day disciplinary layoff without pay for anybody who chooses not to get vaccinated, and that they don't have a medical or religious attestation exemption. I said to the council, and I said publicly yesterday, that the only reason I supported that was because we have also left on the table the opportunity to increase that discipline to termination if people continue to simply not get vaccinated. I continue to believe that this 5 days off, we're just nibbling around the edges. And we owe it to our coworkers, their coworkers. We owe it to those coworkers' families, and we owe it to the community to, as public servants, to get vaccinated so that any interaction – that any city employee has with the public is safe. And you know, our hospitals right now are filled with unvaccinated people. They're not being filled with people who've had adverse effects to a vaccine. You know, so this whole thing that, you know, the vaccines aren't effective and that they're, you know, this vaccine hesitancy is just, it just doesn't sell with me. You know, we're rationing health care again in hospitals as a result of unvaccinated people. And so service to others means service to others, and that means you do it with in a safe manner. And so on October 19th, our next council meeting, we will come back and we will take a look at whether or not more employees stepped up to the plate and chose to be vaccinated, and we'll take a position as to whether or not we're gonna move to termination. Some of the religious exemptions are people who had this altar call in the last couple of weeks. You know, it's hard to challenge those, but to claim it was a sincerely held religious belief. I mean, I have people within the fire department who are emailing me and calling me on the side saying, you know, keep going, because Bill, those people live together in a firehouse for days at a time. And the small percentage, we have like 650 firefighters, 100 of them haven't been vaccinated. And so it's not as though we've got this great outpouring of employees within the fire department saying, we don't want to get vaccinated. But that's a significant percentage, especially if you're living together. And the same is true with the police department. We have about 1,000 police department employees, and that includes command staff and CSOs. And a couple hundred of them have chosen not to get vaccinated. Well, again, it's a relatively small percentage of the entire department. But those people are out in the street interacting with the public every single day. And I think it's just unconscionable for them to be pretending that this vaccine is a threat to them, doesn't work. I'm tired of this stuff about liberty. You know, your liberty ends when it starts to affect other people's health and well-being. But you know what? It's interesting. You had the same kind of dynamic in terms of public discourse happening back 100 years ago when they were doing the whole smallpox thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the more things change, the more they stay the same. And one thing that hasn't changed is that science prevails, and we're seeing that with the 20,000 deaths statewide as a result of COVID.
Tim Tomier was my guest on Friday. Tim officially is named, I believe, yesterday was named the assistant city manager, and he talked about the Reed Park Zoo, and he was actually off to a meeting after our show that afternoon, Friday afternoon. I guess both sides in this dispute are sitting down, or did sit down Friday, and heard kind of a compromise. Have you heard any more about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd use the word compromise. What they are doing is they're moving the zoo expansion over to take over what is currently the zoo parking lot,
mm-hmm.
and part of the Edith Ball Recreation Center adaptive center to their parking lot as well. I have told Tim and our parks director and the people from the zoo, and frankly Nancy Kluge from the zoo agrees, but they're trying to be the good partners, that spending $8 million to save Barnum Hill to me is not a good use of taxpayer money. But that's where we're headed. I've begun to pull together a meeting that will include Tim, the people from the zoo, and their design team, Tory Design, to meet with people from the Edith Ball Adaptive Resource Center to make sure that they have easy access and close access to the front. Because frankly, we're asking people with disabilities to now walk another 200 or 300 feet. Or however they get around to get to the front entrance of the adaptive reuse center. We're also taking away a playground that was servicing developmentally disabled people, looking for a place to rebuild that. Again, more taxpayer money, more inconvenience for the disabled community, and we're putting the zoo expansion right in front of the brand new entryway to the zoo that they just spent a couple of million dollars on. So I've got issues with it, but here's the bottom line, is that if we can do this and preserve access to the Edith Ball Center for the disabled community and also provide the opportunity for future expansion of the zoo, which the Barnum Hill area probably was not going to do, then okay. But I just wish that this option had been presented 2 years ago, so that, or 3 years ago, so that we didn't have to go through all this brain damage about, you know, fighting over Barnum Hill and wasting $2.5 million on design, and now throwing another $5 million at this change. So I think it'll end up working out okay, but it cost an extra $8 million that we didn't need to spend.
All right, Steve Kasachek, we will let you go, and we will talk to you the day after the election.
All right, looking forward to it.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasachek, Democrat, Ward 6 in the city of Tucson. Father Robert is in the house, our faith and spirituality contributor. Lots to talk about with Father Robert as we take a break on the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Perfect time of year to go over to Green Things and get some green things for your garden because the weather has been, as we transition, it was very weird. We had an afternoon rain up at our place in the lower foothills, and then we had another rain last night. Then the weather service had said nothing about a chance of rain, I don't think. Anyway, but we got more rain up at our house. But this is a good time to go over to Green Things. 13-acre site, 3384 East River Road. You will find everything you need for your garden, and you will find some great furniture in Zocalo Village, much of it beautifully handcrafted from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites. Our faith and spirituality contributor is with me in studio, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. Father Robert, how are you?
I'm well, Bill. How are you?
Doing pretty darn good. And as you are the proud owner of a couple of rescue cats. I know you love animals, and a lot of people that listen to my show know I love animals, and you're going to see animals up close and personal Sunday afternoon at St. Philip's.
Right. We have our Blessing of the Animals service, which is an annual tradition that's been going on, I think, for about 55 years there now. It's wow. It's always one of the most popular sort of times of the year. Last year we had to do a sort of drive-by blessing. This year it'll be in the church. And so I'm excited. I'm excited to have that little bit of normalcy back.
And these are not just dogs and cats.
They're usually dogs, cats, tortoises, horses, all manner of things that people bring.
Why the blessing of the animals? What's that about?
Well, I think it's a response to this sort of sense that we all have. That creation and pets and all these sort of so much is given to us as a huge blessing, and so part of it is a response from the church back to the world to acknowledge what a blessing these creatures are in our life, and so for us we have two dogs and two cats, and we try and bring the most cantankerous one of the animals each year because we feel like it's not an exorcism. We can't do everything, but we try and get them a blessing. But, when you see people holding their pets there and the obvious affection they have for them, I think the church should always be sort of about cultivating things that make us more loving. And I think this is one of those examples of the kind of service that we offer that cultivates a more loving community.
And when the pandemic hit, many people turned to animals, not only for comfort, but actually to add give some animals a home during the pandemic. It just seemed people were home, and they wanted to have that companionship.
Well, absolutely. We just got a new house not that long ago, and it was funny. We suddenly felt like the house felt empty without having cats in it. We've always had cats. Mm-hmm. And so we went and we got one cat who has one eye and one who has no teeth.
Oh, yeah.
So we have it's sort of a rehab center for animals at our house now.
I thought when the pandemic hit 18 and a half months ago, Father Robert, that this would be maybe the silver lining in kind of bringing people together, kind of the way it happened with 9/11. And in fact, I've said to some people, we just had that, we had that anniversary for 9/11 recently. And I've said on the air that I wonder if you had an event like that today, and I hope we don't, but whether people would even come together. But the whole thing with the pandemic, are we of like mind that you thought that this would be a path to bringing folks together?
Well, I hoped it would be. I mean, I was living in New York when 9/11 happened. And the thing that I always remember in the weeks after was how the whole city felt like we were in this together, that we had all endured this tragedy together. And it was almost like living in a small town for, everyone was sort of saying hello and nodding to each other and pulling chairs out for each other and holding doors for each other, all these little things that make for civilization in some ways. And so I had hoped that as this pandemic began to unfold and we began to get a sense of the scope of it and frankly the horror of it in some communities, that we would come together again as Americans. I remember going to Oxford, Mississippi, not too long after 9/11. And I was saying to someone that I lived in Manhattan, and she said to me, "Well, we're all New Yorkers now, aren't we?"
Wow.
And I don't, like you say, I don't know that we could have that sense right now. I mean, there's so much division, and there's so much incentive to keep that division going. I don't know that there's enough of a counter incentive to bring us back together. I it's something we're all going to have to pray and work at.
Suffering has just been such a part of the whole pandemic, and let's talk a bit about suffering. Is suffering most fully understood in the category of loss?
It is in the category of loss, but I think it's a broader category than sort of losing. Of course, we all will have that inevitable pain of losing parents or losing other loved ones, and part of the loss isn't just the person or the it's also the sense of what your future looks like, right? So all of us have this sense of this is what our future is going to look like. This is how I'm going to be cared for. This is how I'm going to care for the people whom I love. And I think part of what happens is our sense of a future gets entirely disrupted. And so I think part of the grief process is recognizing in that sort of very painful way that what we had imagined our future would look like is no longer there. And then part of our work, part of the suffering, is then to figure out, well, how do we metabolize that? How do we let that feed some new vision of our future? And a friend of mine, she very tragically lost both of her parents in a car crash. And she's a priest, and she said, my grief is simply love with nowhere to go. Right. And I think that for many people gets at the essence of what that experience of suffering is we have this pent up feeling, this love that we were pouring out on people or so many other things in our lives. And suddenly that has nowhere to go. Right. And I think that was manifested, during the pandemic where people were so wanted to be together. So that desire for togetherness had nowhere to go. That grief had, you know, that love for one another had nowhere to go. I think that it almost begins to cannibalize us in some way or another,
yes.
Sort of eat away at our soul in some ways. And I think that we have a sort of, a whole nation right now that is in various degrees of post-traumatic stress.
I would agree 100%.
Yeah. I was saying to somebody, I said, when I came back from we kind of began to come out of the pandemic at the church. And for the first week or two, everything was sort of hunky-dory and people were excited and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then over the course of a week, I just got this kind of barrage of sort of angry, you know, emails or mm-hmm. Notes from people. And I thought, what in the world is this about?
Mm-hmm.
And what I've come to realize is that we have just whole communities that have been so traumatized by this. And when you look at a community like Tucson, where I don't know what the percentage of our residents who are over a certain age are, but there's so many people who've just been alone for 18 months.
Right.
Right. And so where does that go? Right. Where does that need for togetherness go? And I think it sort of turned inward and sort of ate up a lot of people this last couple of years.
How is the vacuum of loss filled?
Well, I think the vacuum is filled, by sort of meaning making, and I guess what I would mean by that is all of us are sort of called in our lives to figure out what loss means in our own context. You know, and I'll give the example I have given in the past to people is when I was in seminary, there was a group of about 10 of us who used to have breakfast every week, and we discovered in conversation that 9 of the 10 had lost a parent as a child, and so. What that sort of revealed is this opportunity that loss creates for our compassion and empathy to develop more fully. Because once we have experienced that, we suddenly learn what it means to be cared for in those moments, and we learn how to be caregivers for other people. And that can become part of our meaning making. And you'll talk to people who, you know, at the end of life and you meet some people who are enormously bitter, you know, mm-hmm. that they're full of regret. But you meet other people who all along the way have taken the opportunity to become more generous and more caring because what those cracks in their sort of heart have done is open them up to learn how to love more fully. And that's a hard thing. But I think that it's part of the human condition. I you know, periodically people will say to me, oh, I don't know why God's doing this to me. And I'll say, well, if not you, then who should God do it to?
Right.
You know, and it's not about God doing anything. It's about the fact that we are created. We walk through this together as companions on the way. And in Christian theology, we don't have a God who takes away suffering. We have a God who endures suffering alongside us. Those are very different things. I think in the sort of modern American context, there's just this idea that sort of religion is a thing that makes us happy, when actually what it is a thing that brings us joy. And those are two very different things. Sort of a fleeting moment of happiness is not a deep sense of joy. And people who are in immense pain can have a burgeoning sense of joy as they begin to figure out, how do I serve? How do I make meaning out of this experience?
Yeah, and it was 30 years ago. Today I lost my mom, and her ashes are in the wall over at St. Philip's. You have a beautiful area there. What is it called?
The Columbarium.
The Columbarium. And it's a great place just to kind of sit and reflect and watch the hummingbirds come and go. But anyway, so I've been thinking a lot about loss today. So thank you for those thoughts. Let's talk some more, Father Robert, after we take the break on the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? Well, not all news is good news. You know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Just looking at that current temperature, our friends over in Silver City, 72 degrees. I can take that. That's a lovely day. And looking ahead to the weekend, down to 40, lower 40s. So this would be a great weekend to pile in the car or jump in the truck and take a 3-hour drive east of Tucson to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. They've been such a wonderful partner of the Buckmaster Show, they being Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send a lot of our listeners over there, and everybody has a good time. They come back and say, I had no idea what a beautiful area that is, about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, kind of the same elevation is Denver. So this is a perfect time of year with the aspens turning color. So check it out. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for more information of where to stay and many things to do, great ideas of things to do. We continue now our discussion with Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, and we're very proud to have Father Robert as our faith and spirituality contributor to our program. Father Robert, interesting story, kind of a bookshelf review in today's Wall Street Journal about a book that is titled The Vanishing Faith Loss and the Twilight of Christianity in the Land of the Prophets. And I actually thought about you because you've had several trips over to the Holy Land. I'm going to guess three.
I think I'm actually on about a dozen now.
Oh, my goodness. Way off. So anyway, you have an intimate familiarity with the situation of really the loss of Christianity in the Holy Land.
Yeah, it's a complicated thing. I mean, one of the great joys of going to the Holy Land is being with these Christian communities, but they're vanishing. And so, for example, in 1950, Bethlehem was about 80% Christian, and now it's about 8%, maybe 12%, depending on how you count it. But that's a huge decline, and so you see many churches are being turned into museums or the sort of thing. And the complicated piece is that the Christian communities are situated within three different sort of identities. So that there's the Israeli state identity, the sort of the state of Israel. There's a Palestinian ethnic identity. Almost all the Christians there are Palestinian. And then there's the religious identity, sort of being Christian in this land where Muslims and Jews are the majority. And so they're sort of triple marginalized in some ways. And it makes it very, very difficult for the communities there to have a sense of hope or optimism. And frankly, in many of them, the hope they have and the optimism they have is about leaving. It's about sort of coming to the West and joining families who have moved. And so it's hard to get a sense of what the future is going to be like there because many of the young people, their real desire is to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And it's both a great joy to be with those communities, but there's also, you can sense in every conversation, this sort of heartache that's just beneath the surface about their future.
When we were in Egypt in the 1980s, the Coptic Christian church was thriving. It also is really struggling now.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what what that particular area of Christianity, what the Coptics are or who they are.
They're actually one of the oldest branches of Christianity.
Are they?
Yes. So one of the things about going to visit these churches in the Middle East and in Africa is that they really are the cradle of our faith in some ways. So when you go to, let's say, the Armenian liturgy, the Armenian Orthodox liturgies at St. James or at the Holy Sepulchre or at the Church of the Nativity, you're seeing a liturgy that is being sung and offered in much the same way it has for 1,000 years, 1,200 years, 1,500 years in some cases, depending on the community. And so it's always fun to take Western Christians to those places because I think that they have the sense of what old time religion is in the U.S. Yeah. And it's very different in the Middle East.
Old time, the real old time religion. One other item that I have in my stack of stuff pertaining to religion and spirituality, The Ivy League, as you know, Father Robert, pretty much was the tenets, the foundation was Christianity, wasn't it?
Yes.
And this caught my eye that Harvard's chief chaplain is an atheist.
Well,
figure.
Having spent so much time at Yale, there are many comments I could make about Harvard, but I'll try not to. The challenge in this environment, I've been thinking about this. When I saw that story, I was pondering this. You know, I think that we right now have the largest number of Americans ever who are identifying as religiously unaffiliated. And if we think that there is an embedded need for spiritual care, in human beings, just as part of our makeup, what do you do when a third, a half, or more of your population doesn't believe that need exists? And so, for me, the appointment of this chaplain, while being one of those kind of depressing signs of the times, indicated, well, there's perhaps some creative opportunity here to figure out how do you help people acknowledge that need is there in the first place. People who would never go to a priest or never go to a pastor might find in conversation with that person a reawakened sense of that need in themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that the group of spiritual advisors, one of them very conservative, thought this was a good idea.
Yeah, and there was actually a piece written, I think it was in the New York Times not too long ago, by one of the chaplains who voted in favor of this, for many of the reasons that I just sort of articulated, that it's a recognition of change in our society, and so you can either sort of, you know, what's the old William F. Buckley line? You can stand athwart it and shout stop, or you can sort of acknowledge that it's happening and figure out how to respond.
Yeah. All right, Father Robert, before we let you go, again, the public is invited 2:30 on Sunday afternoon. What should people do? What should they bring?
They should bring a pet.
Bring a pet.
The only sort of thing we ask people to do is be prepared to sort of write down their name for contact tracing purposes.
Sure.
But other than that, bring your pet and we would love to have you there. It's a relatively short service, so if you have a cat prone to scratching, it won't take that long. We'd love to have you.
All right. Father Robert Hendrickson from St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, my home church, and St. Philip's is very welcoming to visitors, especially the holiday season. Many people discover the church, but there's always the door is always open. Let's put it that way.
It is. It is always open, and we love having folks come, whether it's one time or make it their religious home.
All right. Thank you, Father Robert.
Thank you.
All right. That'll wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. Dave Ramsey, his very popular show on money, is coming up next. Have a great afternoon, everybody.